Welcome to The Contemplative Life. Three pastors, friends, and spiritual companions help us explore spirituality through a contemplative lens.
I'm Christina Roberts.
I'm Chris Roberts.
I'm Christina Kaiser. We're glad you joined us.
Well, hello. It's great to be with you. Today, we're talking about poetry and the contemplative life. And I, for one, have to say, I don't have a very good starting place with poetry. My introduction to poetry, like most people, is archaic poetry that they make you learn in school. And so the poetry that was presented to me at an early age, I had a pretty strong reaction to it, and maybe even an allergic reaction to it. And I probably didn't want anything to do with poetry because of my early exposure. But in the more recent years, I've come to love poetry because of a few people introducing it to me, particularly as it relates to contemplation. And one of the things that I really appreciate about poetry is its invitation to take a long look at something. Someone who's written something, they've usually thought about it for a long while, and then they put it in a very short, powerful sentence, statement, rhyme, meter, all that. And so I thought I would open it up today to talk about poetry and how it relates to the contemplative. So what do we think?
I am so excited to talk about poetry, but I have to confess, I did not relate to poetry for years and years and years. There was a brief period in like high school where I was going through a sad phase in life where I really loved poetry. I loved to write it. I loved to get my emotions out that way. And then I exited my sad phase, and I didn't know what to do with poetry if I wasn't going to be sad. So, but then I think the biggest problem was is I didn't know any authors that were really grabbing me. So if I just Googled poems, like, ooh, maybe I would like to use a poem, I couldn't just find something randomly top of mind that really worked. And then cut to like a year ago, I met all these amazing people who were super into poetry. And they kept reading them at gatherings. And so every time they would share a poem, I would take the title of the book that they were reading from down, and I started gathering poetry books, and then I started taking them with me in the car and reading them places, and they would make me burst out laughing or make me think in these profound ways. And so I have recently really enjoyed the metaphor aspect of poetry. Like, it just opens up worlds and process and thought.
It's interesting hearing the both of you reflect on your history with poems. As I'm listening to you, I'm reminded of my fourth grade teacher who introduced the class to Shel Silverstein, Where the Sidewalk Ends. And I loved that poetry book. I would read it over and over again. And she was very animated. We would have special times where she would read poetry to the class. So that was probably my first introduction to poetry. And then luckily I had a high school teacher when we had to do Beowulf. She was also very animated and into it. So interestingly enough, I had some positive exposures to poetry. But then, you know, in college, I had to take a poetry class because I needed a particular credit, and that was the only time that worked. And to your point, Chris, really, I think both struggled and appreciated the potency of words, and that you were only allowed to use so many words to express yourself, and just really realized, wow, this is it's an art, it's a craft. There's something very profound about that. And you know, I know we're talking about poems, but of course, song lyrics would fall into that category too. And all of us, I think, on this podcast and those that are listening, we appreciate people that can put into lyrics emotions, things that we're feeling, appreciating, experiencing. And so, you know, I think to your points as well, I think my appreciation of poetry has certainly expanded over the years.
Yes, I love that point that you bring up, Christina Roberts. In fact, if you listen to our podcast or you listen to it a number of times, I often start the phrase, I think, and that's how I start off, you know, whatever it is that I'm going to say. And that's what I love about poetry, because it is an invitation to feel. When I read these words, it gets me out of my head and it gets me from thinking into feeling. And that's what I really love about poetry. It invites me to experience it in a different way, experience these words, not necessarily so much in my head, but more inside of me, in my heart. And it just elicits a different response for me. So that's what I appreciate about poetry.
And maybe building off of that, I think something about poems is that we can go back to them over and over again. So I'm going to probably read a book once unless it's like an amazing book or, you know, an article, things like that. But poetry, song lyrics, same thing. You go back to it over and over again, and there's something about it kind of going deep into you, and you feel it deep in your bones, if you will. And I think even in the contemplative ways in which we approach poetry, whether I'm reading it personally or with a group, often there's a slowing down. There's a really reflecting on. We use the phrase like what shimmers as you read this. And so often there might be one phrase, there might even just be one word that really grabs you, and being able to sit with that one word and how is that word really resonating deeper within my spirit, what I'm feeling. And I can go back to that same poem 3, 6, 9 months later, and a different word, sure enough, is going to shimmer to me because of the beauty of that particular art form. So I think that the deepening really resonates with me.
Yeah, I think so too. There's this creativity that kind of comes out of it. And a friend of mine recently shared, I was so excited, I definitely want to try this. She said she had a haiku birthday party. And as it turns out, haikus are easy enough. 5 syllables, 7 syllables, 5 syllables. It's all, those are the rules, that's it. And so each person would put the first line on a piece of paper or whatever, and then all the papers went into the middle of the room, and then everybody took a different piece of paper and would do the next line and then put it down. And so it would go around 3 times. And then these poems came out, and her reflection was like, these were so beautiful. None of us would have necessarily come up with that exact thing, but because we collaborated and did it together, this is what happened. We had this thing to share at the end. And birthdays, I mean, what a great way to engage and celebrate. And so she's like a haiku master, I feel like. She'll just write a haiku every day, which has not been my story. But she might help me make that become my story in some way. So it can be collaborative. It can be individual. Just so many fun ways to use poetry, it turns out.
And I love that we're looping poetry into the contemplative, because I think for me, being contemplative, poetry is a huge part of that process for me. And, you know, one of my favorite poets is Lee Young Lee, and very serious poet. And, you know, I tend to be, when I'm in contemplative mode, I tend to be more serious. And he has a poem, it's called The Amateur Contemplative, I believe is the poem. And, you know, he talks about someone going on this retreat who their goal is to have a little bit of time and space. And, you know, they're reading from their iPad and, you know, all the things that, you know, true contemplatives would tell you, you don't need anything. You need, it's a minimalist experience. And this person has iPads and phones and everything. And then at the end it says, and a donkey for all your shit. And so, you know, it's like, and the title of the poem is an amateur contemplative. That's just an invitation not to take yourself too seriously, that this is a learning process. Being contemplative, you know, there's some that say you have to do it this way, you have to do it that way. And I think you can try this, you can try that, you can try a little of everything to see what works for you as an individual, but don't take yourself too seriously, because you've got to enjoy it along the way. So that's one of the things I appreciate about contemplative in poetry.
Yeah, I think, you know, thinking about how many people in the Bible really enjoy the Psalms, that's always tends to be a favorite for people. And one of the things that I appreciate about the Psalms is giving language to such a wide variety of emotions. And sometimes the language is uncomfortable when the poet is getting in touch with deep feelings of anger and distress and lament. Those are uncomfortable emotions that they're naming, or this desire, like this jealousy and revenge. And it's like, oh my gosh, are we allowed to talk about that sort of thing? And, you know, I think in contemporary songs and songwritings, of course, there's all sorts of, you know, broken hearts and my love did this and all the stuff. But I think the Bible also offers that as well. And so I appreciate kind of the wide spectrum of invitation, emotion, you know, going back to what you said, Chris, about, I think, but this invites us to feel. And I think that that's super important.
It is super important, because even for those that would say, oh, I'm a heart type, I mean, I'm a heart type, right? But a lot of my day is spent trying to not tap into that so that I can be a productive member of society. And so it does help me if a poem, it could go either way. Either helps me to laugh at something that's just, right, the completely ridiculous, or helps me to embrace how hard the moment is. So things going on with war in the world right now, sometimes I have found like the easiest response is a poem that came from the heart of somebody in the middle of a difficult response. And it just speaks to what we're all feeling but don't have words for. And it's so natural not to have words in the middle of trauma. So to be able to borrow someone else's words for a minute and allow that to kind of help us get through it is so useful. So whether they're ours or not, kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah, I like that. Using someone else's words to help you sort of define what's going on and make sense of the world. And, you know, I love that it comes, poetry, music, those are unexpected places that you find these words. And, you know, I have a guitar student that I've encouraged to write music, and he, you know, it's first started with poetry and then lyrics. And, you know, he's wrote an amazing song about the Ukraine war, and it's called Off to Belarus, and it's about this refugee's experience. And I mean, I was just astounded by the lyric and the prose and the poem at first, but then it turned into a song. He gave words to what someone else in the world is feeling, and it invited me into solidarity with them. And you know, I don't know if there are other means besides music and poetry that do that. So I appreciate it for that fact, that it invites us into solidarity and it invites us into these experiences where we can engage in ways that we normally wouldn't.
Yeah. And I think also maybe to bring the other side in, there's also a lightheartedness. So going back to my Shel Silverstein in the fourth grade, you know, very light and fun and easy. And so I think sometimes I like to write goofy things about my family members or things like that, where it's like, you know, you can take the, you know, roses are red, violets are blue, and change that and make something goofy about a friend of yours. Or, you know, actually we were going through some old photos and things like that, and one of my friends from college would write like goofy poems about how crazy my hair looked in the morning. We were roommates and stuff like that. And just being able to laugh, but to say, oh, you know, you have crazy hair in the morning is one thing, but the way that, you know, it was in this creative poem form, it just like kind of amplifies the celebration of life too in those beautiful ways. And so, yes, there can be the somber and the solidarity, which is beautiful, what you're describing with your guitar student and music student, Chris, but also sort of that lightheartedness that life can offer as well.
For sure. And I think I brought up this woman, Shailene Harkin. She has stuff like that all the time. So like the Song of Songs stuff may be a little too uncomfortable for me. You know, the language just doesn't quite get there for me. But she does something very similar in some of her poetry about this kind of loving, close connection. Like, I can't wait to be with you, O Divine One, type thing. And it does resonate. It does connect. And then suddenly I can be in touch with something that I couldn't otherwise be in touch with. So yeah, in a way, it's because of the humor of it all, right? To just kind of go to that funny place.
Yes. You mean you can't resonate with a flock of goats, hair like a flock of goats descending, or teeth like...
The belly of wheat, man. The belly of wheat. Why?
Well, thank you so much for a rich, rich conversation and different ways to think about poetry and the contemplative. On that note, I think we are going to transition to what we are into this week. What are we into?
Well, I am into oyster crackers. So our family, unfortunately, 4 out of 5 of us had the stomach flu cycle through our home this week. And I have become an oyster cracker snob. So there, for those who don't know, there are like flatter oyster crackers and more poofy ones. And so, you know, when you're reintroducing food, oyster cracker is a favorite in our family. And so I am into the delicacies of oyster crackers.
I love that you just used the word poofy. And then there's the poofy cracker. So maybe in the poetry vein, I have been very much into the gnarly trees around town. I've just been noticing, like, the leaves aren't quite out yet, so you can still really see the tree, but the weather's gotten a little better, and so I've been trying to drive extra slow and just noticing how the trees twist in these various ways. It was some pretty old trees around, and just wondering, what is the story? Like, at what point did that happen? There's a lot of character, so now I need to take a walk and really be able to see the trees.
Nice. Well, I have been into birds lately. We have gone on lots of walks. We live really close to a marsh. We live close to like some bird sanctuaries. And, you know, I think I've noticed a few bird watchers, you know, with their big cameras, with their long lenses. And I'm like, you know, I've had thoughts in the past of who wants to do that on their Saturday? And, you know, I've been on these walks and discover these different colored birds and like just the different species. And, you know, it's been fascinating. And I'm like, oh, I can see why people get into bird watching. And I've been into this. We have a particular bird that's native to Wisconsin. I believe it's a black bird, and it has orange on its shoulders and just a line of yellow underneath the orange. And my goal is to figure out what kind of bird that is. And so I've really been into birds and bird watching lately. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. As you may have picked up on, we very much value community and relationship here at the Contemplative Life. And so we'd love it if you had a moment to drop us a line, maybe tell us where you're listening from, or even let us know if you have a question or topics you'd like to see addressed here on the podcast. And you can find all of our contact information on our website, thecontemplativelife.net. Until next time, make it a great week.